other sects of Muslim. It is a place where peace took birth 1400 years ago, and still the world is propagating peace of Imam Hussein.
Except for some sporadic incidents, the annual Muharram commemorations in different parts of India have largely been incident-free over the years. In most cases, the majority Hindus have actively cooperated with minority Muslims in taking out street processions in small and big cities. This year, however, Muharram comes amid a rising tide of hate and intolerance and growing religious polarization in the Bharatiya Janata Party-ruled India, stoking fears that the yearly processions could face attacks from Hindu radical groups, especially in states ruled by the Hindu Nationalist Party.
Last week, the Muslim community in Kanpur city of India's biggest province, Uttar Pradesh, announced that they will not be taking out a traditional Pakhi procession this Muharram. The organizers said the decision was taken to avert the possibility of any untoward incident that may lead to a law and order situation in the month of Muharram. In early June, the city had witnessed violent communal clashes amid protests over the blasphemous remarks made against Prophet Muhammad by senior BJP leaders.
Imam Hussein's sacrifice teaches us patience and being steadfast to our mission. We see Muslims across the globe are suffering, from Palestine to Syria, from Rohingya to Kashmir. Muslims are fighting against oppression. All our will comes from the pages of the Battle of Karbala.
Muslims in Uttar Pradesh, which is ruled by the BJP, are treading cautiously. They don't want Muharram commemorations, which represent a rallying cry for truth and justice, to become a source of hate and hostilities. But it's not just about them. Muslims in other major Indian cities, including New Delhi, Mumbai, Bangalore, and Allahabad, are also planning low-key Ashura events this year.
The world's biggest democracy is depriving us of all our freedoms and claims Kashmir to be its integral part. This is interference in our religious rituals.
Over the past 7 years, under the Hindu nationalist BJP government, Muslims in India have been marginalized, discriminated against, attacked, lynched, and denied their fundamental right to religious freedom. Women have faced the hijab ban, while men have been barred from offering prayers in open spaces, creating a hostile environment for more than 200 million population, one of the world's largest Muslim communities.
Now to talk more on this, we are joined by Professor Ali Nadeem Rezavi, Professor of History at Aligarh Muslim University, joining us from Haswa, Fatehpur district in Uttar Pradesh, which is known for its Azadari. First of all, welcome to the program, Professor. Now, Muharram has always been observed with tremendous fervor in India. Can you tell us the role of places like Lucknow and Hyderabad, both of whom had Shia ruling dynasties, in promoting the tradition of Azadari in India?
In India, as you rightly pointed out, that there are two centers of Azadari, one in the Deccan, around Hyderabad, and the second in Awadh, that is Lucknow. But if you actually look at the history of Azadari, it goes back in time. In fact, it is from the 14th century that one starts getting information regarding the Ashra-e-Muharram, during which we are informed that at least in the area of Delhi and in areas around Delhi, Tuskiras or Majalis, as it was then known, were being held. And by 18th century, we come to know from a number of Persian sources of the period that on each and every marketplace around Delhi during the 10 days of Muharram, members would be set, pulpits would be set, and there would be orators who would be talking about the sacrifice of Imam Hussein on the 10th of Muharram.
Professor, can you tell us how are the annual Muharram commemorations in India different and unique from other parts of the world in terms of customs and traditions?
When Muharram is commemorated in India, if you compare it with the commemorations being held, say, in Iraq or Iran, or at other places, in Central Asia, for example, we know that even under Timur, Muharram was being celebrated in the Central Asian Timurid lands. We find that there are a large number of common elements, similarities. But then along with those similar traditions, there are a number of things which differ from other places. For example, the very concept of Imam Bala is peculiar to the Indian subcontinent. Bala means an enclosure, and there were certain structures which were built here known as Imam Bala, the enclosures of the Imam, which were very different from what was happening in Iran, say for example under the Safavids, where the Taziyeh was a passion play, a drama. In the Indian subcontinent, Taziyeh means a paper or a wood or some other material through which replicas of the tomb of Imam Hussein are made. They are known as Taziyehs. Whereas in the other countries, such type of Taziyehs were not known. They were typical to the Indian context.
Professor, we hear a lot about Husseini Brahmins and how they join Muslims in observing Muharram every year. Can you tell us more about them?
As far as the tradition of, the legends about Husseini Brahmins is concerned, this is a tradition which is prevalent not only amongst the Shias of India, who believe that there was a section of the Brahmins who rushed to help Imam Hussein after the battle of Karbala took place. But this is a tradition which is quite alive. In fact, in a section of Hindu Brahmins who today go by the name, caste name Dutt. There are a large number of, Indian Mumbai film stars, Sanjay Dutt and Nargis Dutt and so on and so forth, a large number of them. All these people, basically from the region of Punjab in North India, who are Brahmins, who write against their name Dutt, they themselves believe that their ancestors, on hearing the call that Imam Hussein had issued from the battle ground of Karbala, that when he gave the call, clarion call, that whosoever can come and help me in this cause. So in response to that cause, a group of Brahmins left for Iraq. They reached after Karbala had happened. The haram had been caught. They were prisoners and they were being taken to the court of Yazid. Midway, these Brahmins from Hindustan, had a fight with the Umayyad army, in which a large number of Brahmins gave their life. So among the Brahmins, it is said that they still claim that their necks have, a line which symbolizes that they had cut off their necks and heads for the cause of Imam Hussein.
On that note, I would like to thank Professor of History Ali Nadim Rezavi for being on the program. Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
Uzair Rizvi, a New Delhi-based journalist and fact-checker, shares what he calls great photographs from North India's Lucknow city, known as the epicenter for Azadari in the Urdu-speaking world, before the tradition spread to other parts of the region. This Twitter user shares a picture of one Hindu man named Rajesh, who comes and sits outside a Hosseiniya in southern Indian city of Hyderabad every Muharram to take care of slippers and shoes of mourners. Journalist Raj Gopal says a traditional Muharram procession in northern Indian city of Kanpur has been cancelled this year, with a cleric asking people to perform azadari at home amid fear of violent attacks by radical Hindus.
And that was our episode about the emergence of a new quadrilateral group, including India and the Muharram commemoration in the country. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Food for thought. Salam and our heartfelt condolences to all on the fateful day of Ashura, when Imam Hussein, peace upon him, while glancing over the army of Yazid in Karbala and seeing Umar ibn Sa'd ordering his forces to attack him, had said, "This day Allah has permitted us to engage in jihad, and He shall reward us for our martyrdom. So prepare yourself to fight against the enemies of Islam with patience and resistance. O sons of the noble and self-respected persons, be patient, for death is nothing but the bridge which you must cross after facing trials and tribulations so as to reach heavens and its joys. Which of you do not like to go from this prison of the world to the lofty palaces of paradise?"
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alayk, ya Sar Allah.
Sorrowful is the sun as arrows reach the sky. Creation is in shock as you prepare to die. Everything you give, you gave without complaint. You died a tragic death, but you did not die in vain. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein. Hussein, Hussein, Hussein.
This is A to Z, an introduction into Husseini lifestyle. Today's lesson, the sacrifices that the Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam presented to establish a life of honor. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. I'm your host Hussein Hinzano. And today we're going to talk about the sacrifices that the Imam presented to establish a life of honor in Islam. Before anything, I would like to send my sincere condolences for the arrival of the month of Muharram. I would like to send my heartfelt condolences for the commemoration of Al-Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam. Now, the examples of sacrifices that the Imam Al-Hussein presented to establish a life of honor in Islam are really astonishing and astounding, because the intellects of the people of the world were shaken by it, and it felt a deep imprint on their hearts. So even those who were slightly perceptive were also affected by it. The most important matter that makes the Imam unique in this is incomparable steadfastness that he displayed in front of terrible events, because the Imam was armed with a limited patience in such a way that the historians say the crushing powers that were continuously moving towards the Imam were welcomed by him with absolute submission to God's will, in such a way that no kind of weakness or, you know, like cowardice was seen in it. And whenever tragedy's testing patience descended upon him, his lips used to open, and with deep faith, which was the most prominent quality of his personality, he used to say. Now, this is just among the examples that we're talking about, example of the sacrifice that the Imam did in a way, in such a manner that it presented him, it made him to establish a life of honor. He remained respected up to today.
Why is my heart set on fire when I hear your name?
As-salamu alayk, ya Aba Abdullah.
Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And today we're talking about the sacrifices that the Imam presented, the Imam Al-Hussein alayhi salam presented to establish a life of honor. What made him to stand up to today's Islam, up to today? It's something that took place long time ago in the history of Islam, but up to today, it's respected. Up to today, people are hearing about Hussein. People are respecting Al-Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What are the main reasons? What are the sacrifices that this particular personality, a prominent personality, made? Now, Al-Imam Hussein is reported to have said, "Being in the sight of Almighty Allah has made it easy for us to bear what is befalling us." The wazirs expressing that the faith was that very secret of miracle and eternality in the mission of Hussein, which is lofty example that leaves a school for generations to show them a way and increase its bestowals. So, what are we learning from the words of Al-Imam Hussein? That Al-Imam Hussein say that he is in the sight of the Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and that is what has made him to stand against all the challenges he was facing at the times, the challenges of the tyrant rulers, the challenges of the oppression that was realized or it was felt from the tyrant rulers. And this is what me and you and we as the followers of Ahlul Bayt should be doing. We should stand with Allah, we should stay with Allah, we should make Allah be our shield against all the challenges that we're facing in life, against anything that is coming against us in life. And that way, we are going to live the life of Ahlul Bayt, and we are definitely going to be successful and fight against any challenges that are facing us. Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, I will see you fi amanillah. Until next episode, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Again, hello.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode and another lesson, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Better friends than you, but anyone stay here won't be alive tomorrow. You can save yourself tonight and go. A deep silence filled the air.
The sky is the limit for wind sports in Iraq's Kurdistan region as members of the paragliding team launched into the sunset. Tourists have also come to watch team members bravely run towards the edge of the cliff of Mount Asmar. They usually take off facing the west to catch the sunset and then glide down towards the grey green meadows. The windy landscape around Iraq's northeastern city of Sulaymaniyah is a hot spot for paragliding. Participants of the sport say it requires a lot of physical strength and mental concentration. Some say their favorite aspect of the activity is the intense silence when flying high above the ground. There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day, since the menu largely includes local flavors.
Visitors and staff at a French zoo have celebrated the first birthday of twin pandas. The young bears were given a tasty treat of frozen cakes and other treats. As part of the event, five lucky visitors were also given the chance to participate in the celebrations behind the scenes with golden tickets. Other festivities included face painting and panda-themed activities. The baby pandas were born last August and now weigh 23 and 28 kilograms. They live with their mother at Zoo Parc de Bouval, where they have been on display since their arrival in 2021.
Many people develop deeper relationships with four-legged animals, treating them like their own kids. A Kenyan conservationist is one of them. 33-year-old Salome Lemasia has been a community ranger in Sierra Conservancy, northern Kenya, since 2015. The mother of four is stationed at a rhino sanctuary and is in charge of protecting a male rhino named Loijipo. At just a few days old, Loijipo was abandoned by his mother, possibly due to her being spooked by something. After being cared for, he was returned to the sanctuary under surveillance in an attempt to rewild him. 3 years on from his release into Sierra Wilderness, he is taking his time to carve out his territory, of course, with the help of Salome. The chess fever in the southern Indian city of Chennai is on the peak as the 44th International Chess Olympiad kicks off there. Students created a mammoth chess board on the playground and dressed up as 32 chess pieces to promote the game. For 2 weeks, Chennai is hosting nearly 2,000 players from 188 countries. For the first time in nearly 100 years of history of the Chess Olympiad, India is playing host. The event will run until August the 10th. Ahead of the game, 150 underprivileged children from various government schools were given the opportunity to fly. These were the students who won in a district-level chess tournament. Excited spectators gather at the Solberg Airport in the U.S. for the 39th New Jersey Lottery Festival of Ballooning.
We have about 45 balloons here today, including these spectacular special shapes. Our signature New Jersey Lottery Sunny Days balloon. You can see the tiger. Unicorn is hiding behind there. Tasmanian Devil, unique photo panda. We are having a spaceship. There's Billy the Kid. Spectacular presentation. You won't believe your skies this weekend.
Dozens of hot air balloons were test-inflated in preparation for the real deal. The festival is considered the largest summertime event in New Jersey. Reddington City officials have predicted about 170,000 people will join the festival over the weekend. Weather forecasts say the sky are gentle enough for over 100 balloons to take flight in the morning and evening in mass ascents. And no one is more excited than the festival producer, who has been planning the event for months.
Including these spectacular special shapes, the balloons bring out the kid in everyone. You know, I've done this for a long time. This is the 39th annual one. But still, when I hear that propane whirring and these balloons going up, it makes the hair on my arm stand up.
The producer says these balloons will be handled by professional pilots and other balloons will be available for rides. The festival will last for 3 days, ending with food vendors, games, amusement rides, and other entertainment. There will also be a massive fireworks display as well as a nighttime feature of glowing balloons. The annual festival is the largest seasonal hot air balloon festival in North America. It draws in thousands of visitors every year.
You might think twice about throwing out your old trainers after this story. A startup in Tunisia breathes new life into old shoes as artists restore and even customize the footwear. The new business is called Kenenti and is located in the capital, Tunis. Here, the team uses fabrics, laces and leather recovered from various factories for the repair work. The creative artists work on every detail during each project, even the soles of the shoes. The work aims to find solutions to shoe waste and reuse items instead of adding them to the world's landfills. Cherif Zeroui is the co-founder of Kenenti. He says the idea came to him 2 years ago when he discovered the number of shoes thrown away each year in Tunisia.
In France, there were 100 million pairs of shoes thrown away every year. This is a huge figure for us, and for the ecosystem and for the earth. In Tunisia, it's almost the same given the population. There were 3 or 4 million shoes thrown away every year. So we thought of giving added value to these shoes, so we restored them.
Zerbui also says he is happy to create jobs for those willing to participate regardless of the educational degree. Besides shoes, these artists dabble in restoring worn-out handbags, giving them a brand new look. Many of the artists and interns say they are proud to be part of this unique project. They say they feel like a family there. The startup is the first trainer restoration business to be launched in North America. Would you buy a pair of scrap tire sandals? Well, in the Vietnamese capital, Hanoi, you will find all kinds of handmade sandals from recycled tires. The famously rugged footwear of the Viet Cong have traveled vast distances over the decades. Shoemakers use sharp knives and chisels to craft a sandal from huge tires. For those seeking a nod to yesteryear, the hard-sole sandals are available at markets and small stores alike, with prices ranging from $2,000 to $1,000. The Vietnamese first began making rubber sandals in the late 1940s during the first Indochina War against the French, using tires from ambushed army trucks. They found the sandals were cheap to make and survive well in wet, muddy and hilly conditions. Even in peacetime, the design remains popular for sustainability reasons. Living through a pandemic is strange as we are often locked indoors, but a UK-based Indian mechanical engineer made the best use of his time during the coronavirus lockdown and built an airplane. 38-year-old Ashok Ali Serial, who is also a private pilot, had long dreamt of a personal aircraft. He initially planned to order an aircraft kit and built it with his colleagues. But he says the 2020 lockdown left him with no choice but to complete it on his own. Now he has an aircraft which he has named after his youngest daughter, Dia. The plane can carry up to four people, including the pilot, and fly about 250 kilometers an hour. After getting clearance to fly, he flew across four European countries with his friends. He has also gone on a trip with his family of four. Some gardens are decorated with genomes and other cute ornaments, but this garden uses tank debris to stand out amongst others. The intention of the gardener isn't to have the most army-themed patch. Valeria tried to remove the tank, but ultimately, because of its size and weight, it was impossible. So he just let it stay. The owner says he is used to having the tank there, even though it reminds him of hard times. Next to the wreckage, this family has planted cabbage and potatoes, which they harvest and use each year. The tank was left over from the war between Russia and Ukraine that began earlier this year.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio.
Thank you.
log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio in the month of Muharram presents today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Salamun Alaikum. This is today's special. Today is Ashura. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. You're listening to this program on the day of Ashura, 10th of Muharram, 1444 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 7th of Murdad, 1401. Of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 8th of August 2022 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, all my friends in humanity and in faith, accept our condolences on this month, Muharram, and especially on this day, Ashura. Please keep us in your prayer and your du'as.
On that sad and grievous day of Ashura, we are proud to be called the Shia. On that sad and grievous day of Ashura, we are proud to be called the Shia. When our eyes and our hearts will shed those tears for Hussein, the master of the martyrs.
On that sad and grievous day of Ashura, we are proud to be called the Shia. On that sad and grievous day of Ashura, we are proud to be called the Shia.
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein.
To remember Imam al-Hussein, peace be upon him. We notice Imam al-Hussein and his companions and family were forced to stop in the desert land of Karbala by Yazid soldiers. At dawn on the day of Ashura, Imam al-Hussein and his men knew what was coming and made their final prayers. Despite knowing they would die that day, all of Imam Hussein's men, which had reached over 70 people, stayed loyal to him and chose to die loyal to their principles rather than live under a corrupt ruler. The Battle of Karbala began at noon. Despite the small number of Imam al-Hussein and his men, knowing they would light the fire of revolution, they fought the army of Yazid bravely. However, one after another, the friends of Hussein were martyred until only Imam al-Hussein himself remained. As the evening was drawing near, Imam al-Hussein was all alone. Fatigued, thirsty, and heavily wounded, he did not give up and stuck to his principles till the very end. Eventually, Imam al-Hussein himself fell after being attacked by the army of Yazid from all sides. Imam Hussein was martyred, but his stand would be remembered by those striving for social justice for over 1,000 years after him. Condolences on the martyrdom of such a brave personality. سید عباس رضویان.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. الحمد لله رب العالمین. السلام علیک یا ابا عبدالله الحسین. Brothers and sisters, I send my deep condolences for the time period of Muharram and for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein علیه السلام. We were talking about زیارت عاشورا and we were talking about how to benefit from زیارت عاشورا and to make this a spiritual journey for us. We talked about the first station, which is the station of Bala. And we understand that Ahlul Bayt, alayhi wasalam, they dealt with this Bala in the best way, and they submitted to the will of God. Second, we said, we talked about grief and huzn, and that we should share the grief and huzn of the Ahlul Bayt. And it gives us a very high station, and it gives us a very high status. Third, we talked about reaching the position of silm, peace, and lan, or harb, with the enemies of Imam Hussein, meaning that we separate ourselves from the enemies of Imam Hussein, alayhi salam, and we take ourselves fully to the camp of Imam Hussein. We take our mind, body, soul, everything we do, everything we think about, everything that's in our heart, we align it with Imam Hussein, alayhi salam. When we talk about aligning ourselves with Imam Hussein, it doesn't only mean about us. Allah has given us an obligation, which according to the narration, all other obligations can be like a drop of water compared to this ocean. What is this obligation? It is the obligation of enjoining the good, of forbidding the evil, of not only thinking about myself, about thinking about others, trying to help others. If somebody is in harm in this world, do you only care about yourself? Or do you try to make others stay away from harm? Do you try to help others out? So this is the basic philosophy behind Amr bil Ma'ruf wa An-Nahi Anil Munkar, which is enjoining the good and forbidding the evil. When we look at some of the letters that Imam Hussein alayhi salam has and some of the statements he had, he gives the entire purpose of why he uprose. He says that, وَإِنَّمَا خَرَجْتُ لِطَلَبِ الْإِصْلَاحِ فِي أُمَّةِ جَدِّي. I moved out solely to seek to rectify the affairs of the ummah of my grandfather. أُرِيدُ أَنْ أَمُرَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَأَنْهَى عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. My purpose is to enjoin good and forbid evil. So therefore, he wants to rectify, he wants to make good the deviation, the distortion that happened to the ummah, to the nation of the Prophet after he passed away. And he wants to enjoin the good. So this is one of the key reasons that he uprose. That he just didn't care about himself, Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He cared about the ummah. And he sacrificed himself. And with his holy blood, the ummah was awakened. At that time, and even today, about 1400 years after this tragic event. When we look at some of the narrations, in Al-Kafi, there's a very deep narration about enjoining the good. It talks about Imam Baqir alayhi salam, and this narration talks about a group of people that come at the end of time. They might pray, they might fast, as long as it doesn't hurt them or doesn't harm them too much. But they leave Amr bil Ma'ruf al-amr bi-ma'ruf wal-nahy al-munkar. They leave this important obligation. What happens to such people in the narration? In such a narration, it says that in such case, the anger of Allah will be upon them. هُنَالِكَ يَتِمُّ غَضَبُ اللَّهِ عَزَّ وَجَلَ عَلَيْهِمْ. Even they're praying, they're fasting, they might be doing other obligations, but they are not enjoining the good. At the end of the narration, it talks about that to the people of Shu'aib, that God sends to Shu'aib in this narration, that I'm going to chastise 100,000 people. 40,000 of them are evil, 60,000 of them are good. And Prophet Shu'aib is surprised. He says, are you going to punish the good people? And then Allah says in the narration that, why dahanu ahl al-ma'asi? They stopped giving good advice to the sinners. Walam yaghbadu lighadabi, and they did not become anger because of my anger. Meaning that they did not take serious those things that I've made haram. They did not take serious those things that I've made wajib for others. And because of this, the good and evil together they perished.
On the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions, be with today's special. Every day from IRIB English Radio.
People rise up and mourn, it is Ashura. See the struggle of Hussein in the Kabbalah.
Ashura and the message of the Imam. Whilst Imam Hussein martyred in the battle, the message of the Imam was born. His actions and stand at Karbala inspired a series of small uprisings against Yazid, which eventually led to his death. Yazid showed the world his corrupt morals after the Battle of Karbala, where he took the family of Hussein as captives and forced them to make nearly 1,000-kilometer journey to his palace. But Imam Hussein's family did not give in to Yazid just because of Imam al-Hussein's martyrdom. Rather, they too were inspired by his stand. Imam Hussein's sister, Lady Zainab, and Imam Hussein's son, Ali ibn Hussein, both gave powerful speeches against Yazid in front of his ministers, calling him out for killing Imam Hussein, but also his corrupt regime. The family of Hussein would spend their lives spreading the word about Imam al-Hussein's stand and teaching morals and principles of the Imam.
Assalamu alaykum, ya Abu Abdullah. وعلى الأرواح التي حلت بفنائك عليك مني سلام الله أبدا ما بقيت وبقي الليل والنهار ولا جعله الله آخر العهد من زيارتك السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين الذين بذلوا مهجهم دون الحسين عليه السلام
Ashura, the day of mourning for Imam al-Hussein. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. The day of Ashura is mourned and remembered by millions of people across the world as the day Hussein and his supporters were martyred in the Battle of Karbala. Today, pilgrims from all across the world visit the shrine of Hussein ibn Ali in Karbala, in Iraq, where he is buried, to pay their tribute to his courageous stand. On the day of Ashura, many Muslims partake in large peaceful gatherings where they recite poems in memory of Hussein and his sacrifice whilst lamenting and beating their chest as a cultural tradition to display their grievance. Many people use the day of Ashura as a day to perform acts of kindness and charity as a way for them to keep alive the very same principles and values Hussein gave his life for.
As Abu Abdullah goes back into the battlefield, the enemies have developed a bit more courage. They begin to throw rocks at Abu Abdullah. They begin to taunt Abu Abdullah. They begin to make fun of Abu Abdullah. A point where it becomes when people begin to shoot arrows at the body of Imam Hussein. Eventually the attacks increase. We're told that one enemy shoots an arrow and this arrow lands right into the forehead of Abu Abdullah. The arrow pierces the forehead. Imam Hussein has the energy to pull the arrow out. The blood begins to fall off of his forehead into his eyes. And as he begins to clean the blood off of his eyes, the arrows begin to increase. The number of arrows begin to increase until the point where Abu Abdullah's body becomes covered by arrows. People begin to then pelt him with stones. Whatever they have at their disposal, they begin to throw against the body of Abu Abdullah. Eventually, as some of the writers of Maqtal mentioned, that Abu Abdullah is about to fall off his horse. As Hussein lays in this state and the enemies continue to circle around him, like vultures, they begin to peck at him, to hit him, to throw whatever it is that they have at him. Eventually, a man comes along and he kicks Abu Abdullah. He kicks him till he's back onto his back. As they get closer, the enemy forces narrate that they've never seen such a beautiful face. Although he's about to go back to Allah, he's still remembering Allah. He still murmurs under his breath, "Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un." Ridhan bi qada'ihi wa tasliman li amri. He keeps repeating those verses of the Quran. He keeps saying, "Bismillah wa billah wa fi sabilillah wa ala millati rasulillah." Eventually, brothers and sisters, Imam Hussein in this state, Harmala once again has been told by Umar ibn Sa'ad, Harmala, that same one that shot that arrow into the neck of young Ali al-Asghar just a few moments before the Abu Abdullah. Harmala is once again told to get ready for another arrow. And Harmala begins to find that three-pronged arrow to shoot into the neck of Abu Abdullah. As Harmala shoots the arrow into the neck, as the blood begins to pour out of the body of Abu Abdullah, as arrows begin to fly, as the attacks begin to multiply in Abu Abdullah, Umar ibn Asad Mal'un gives one last command. He tells that cursed Shimr ibn al-Jawshan, he says, go and end the life of this man. As we know, brothers and sisters, that Shimr ibn al-Jawshan, the curse, he goes towards Abu Abdullah. He takes his sword out of the sheath that he has. As the 12th Imam says in Ziyarat al-Nahiya, where he says that Shimmer was Jalisun ala sadrihi, that Shimmer is sitting on the chest of Abu Abdullah. He grabs Imam Hussein by the beard, he lifts the head up, and he takes his sword against the neck of Abu Abdullah.
Condolences to all Muslims all around the world on the month of Muharram when Imam Hussein alayhi salam was martyred in the land of Karbala. Dear friend, inshallah, we continue our discussion on the next episode of today's special. Until then, wassalamu alaikum.
Allahumma ij'al mahyaya mahyaya Muhammadin وآل محمد ومماتي ممات محمد وآل محمد.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.